Hello, everyone, and welcome back after a break. Welcome back to episode 259 of the 8-Bit Adventures podcast. I am your host, Sean Hayes, and we've got, you know, some gaming news this week. A lot of Nintendo stuff this week. And I know typically our news segment, you know, our quick fire news is a little Nintendo focused, but there's definitely been some, I don't want to necessarily say interesting, but there are some concerning things, that have, folks up in arms about this week. And then, our deep dive is going to be this, out of nowhere book announcement from Wizards of the Coast for Dungeons and Dragons. Seems like just a lot of really unexpected stuff happening lately. So we're going to talk about that, because there's some really interesting things going on there. I will apologize in advance, is while on vacation, we all got sick. And so I'm kind of just resigning myself to being sick all the time, I guess, is what happens when you have a toddler. So I'm just a little stuffy, a little congestion. So if I sound horrible, that's why. I think I sound worse than I feel. It's mostly just, you know, just some congestion up in my nose that, really just kind of affects how I talk. So gonna try and push through that. Cause I really want to talk about, Journeys Through the Radiant Citadel. As well as, just provide an update on some of these new segments this week. Hopefully, these are all fresh pieces of news. You know, when you're on vacation, like time already is kind of meaningless, in this sort of pandemic era. But then like when you're on vacation and you're not in a regular routine, time really loses all meaning. So again, hopefully this is all fresh news. I tried to find stuff that was only within the past couple of days. So bear with me if it's not. All right. Okay. That said, hi, hello everyone. How you doing? You doing okay? Staying hydrated? Not getting blown away in the weather here? Did y'all enjoy that warm day that we had? I hope so, because we didn't get one where I was. So, all right. Why don't we get into quick fire news? We'll get that out of the way, shall we? All right. So it seems like another week, another game studio that comes out that it's actually kind of horrible. So Moon Studios, which is the Ori developer, so Ori and the Blind Forest, Ori and the Will of the Wisps, was, I had it written down somewhere, that, one of the gaming news sites did a big expose on it. Hang on. Games Beat. That's what it is. Jeez, that took far too long. But yeah, so big scoop by Games Beat. Did this big expose on Moon Studios, talking about the culture there. They spoke with many developers, as well as like the founders. And it seems like a lot of it derives from the two founders of the company, but just has a very oppressive atmosphere and is rife with casual racism, sexism, anti-Semitism, bullying. At first it was, you know, kind of scoffed at by the founders, you know, who, you know, have said that they want to have an anti-corporate culture, which, you know, in most cases, like you would think that would be a good thing, you know, anti-corporatism. Except in this case, it meant more of we don't want to have HR get in the way of what we want to do and what we want to say. And that means that when tempers flare, there's not really any checks and balances in place to protect employees. So what it ends up with are people with egos let their egos get the better of them, and then they take it out on other teams, and expecting perfection. So just a lot of stuff going on there. But yeah, basically it boils down to the way the company is structured allows the founders, it seems, to just have free rein with whatever they want to say and however they want to say it, which isn't necessarily conducive to building a good company culture. And because they put out good products, people want to work there. And so they solve this problem by just having a high turnover rate. So yeah, just a cautionary tale for anybody looking to work at Moon Studios. It's also fully remote. Like, it's all remote. There is no physical work location. And so yeah. You also have to deal with like the sort of semi-anonymous. You know, it's not really anonymous because like people's names are attached and everything, but like you're not doing face-to-face stuff. Like it's all over text or voice calls. So it kind of removes a little bit of human element from it. Of just a little bit of toxicity going on there. So, who knows? You know, we may see more things like this pop up in the wake of Activision Blizzard, and a lot of people, you know, speaking out at smaller developers as well as larger ones. Might even be more likely that people start speaking out at smaller developers just because, like it's less of a monolithic giant entity that you have to contend with. So just that was kind of the big thing that's been circulating. Just because those games are so good and they're so polished, you know, you would think that like it's a really good studio that's producing them, and it turns out like it's a really toxic culture surrounding that. Which turns out, you know, one of the founders was from Activision, was from Blizzard, tried to get the other one hired at Blizzard, and then that didn't work out, and then eventually he left and they started their own company. So who knows? Maybe this is related to sort of the cultural problems at Activision Blizzard. So who knows? Who knows? I still haven't really seen a whole lot from the other smaller development studios that have sort of spun out from the Exodus at Blizzard. So hopefully that either means that they change their culture and that they're doing okay and that they're actually doing right by their employees. Or if they weren't, then they're taking note of this and they're quietly making changes to have a better work culture there. So, all right, enough about Moon Studios and that whole situation. Nintendo Switch had a small update that allows you to create folders. So 5 years in, folks, you will now be able to create folders for your games on Switch. It is convoluted in that you have to go like two screens in order to even access them. So, you know, kind of at that point, it's like, well, why bother? You know, I created a couple folders. I will probably never use them because, again, it doesn't actually organize your home screen. So there is that, you know, that which is kind of the whole point of folders is to like be able to organize your home screen. So, Who knows? But yeah, that is available to Nintendo Switch owners. Now, how you do it is you have to go to the option on your home screen where it says like all games, and then you have to push the L button from there to open up like a folder creation menu. And then you're able to like group whatever games under whatever criteria, name that folder. So yeah, I don't know how useful it's gonna be, because it kind of like it provides the functionality, but not where people wanted it. And so I don't know if this like does anything for anybody. So, but thanks, Nintendo. I don't know. Next up, CD Projekt Red, makers of universally beloved Cyberpunk 2077, and actually sort of universally beloved Witcher 3, have announced a new Witcher game, not The Witcher 4, but a new Witcher game is in development. It is using Unreal Engine 5 as opposed to their own in-house engine. So that's something of note. And it looks like it's gonna start really departing from the book series. And sort of doing their own thing, just set in that universe. So ultimately, that's all we know is they were very clear. They were like, this is not going to be The Witcher 4. It's going to be using Unreal Engine 5, and that's all we have to say about it, pretty much. So there is no release date or anything. This is just an announcement that it's coming and that they're working on it. All right. So in concerning news for some folks, the Wii Shop channel and DSi Shop channels have been offline for about a week at this point. No announcement has been made as to why or if they will return. Nintendo did previously mention that at some point they would send out a notice as to when they were taking the channels down. They had already removed the functionality to buy stuff, but now it's basically like the front end system. There's some sort of error occurring on it. But like it's the sites, there's just some weird issue going on with the like the sites themselves, and so it's entirely like a front end issue. So, but Nintendo hasn't made any announcement as to whether like it's a bug and that it's something that they're working on to fix, or if they just quietly took it down and it's not coming back. So the lack of communication from Nintendo is very frustrating about this for folks that are still using those platforms. I don't know. You know, I think on the one hand, there should be communication happening about it. You know, especially since they said previously, like, that they would make an announcement as to when it would be taken down. So like if this is not that, at least come out and say that. That like there's an issue happening with those shops. We're looking into it. Something as simple as that. I tried looking to see if there was something on Twitter. Couldn't find anything to just at least verify before relaying this information. But on the flip side, I mean, we're talking about stuff that's like 15 years old for consoles that are like two generations ago. So I don't know. You know, I think also at a certain point, you have to be willing to let it go. So, you know, I don't necessarily think there is, you know, a high ground in this. I think there are some acceptances that, you know, both Nintendo and consumers need to make here. But at the end of the day, how hard would it be for Nintendo to just make an announcement, like one way or the other? Like, just to just confirm, like, should these be down? Like, if yes, then just say, hey folks, sorry, they're gone. Like, at least give that confirmation and then deal with, you know, the blue. I kind of wonder if they did that, or like if something happened and they're kind of just like, well, maybe this is a good opportunity to just take them offline, and are trying to figure out the PR response to tell the public, since they didn't give notice ahead of time, which they said they were going to. So, and speaking of which, Dragalia Lost, Nintendo's only mobile title, or its only mobile only title, I should say. They have plenty of other mobile titles, but this one is like the only one that appeared on mobile first and has not appeared elsewhere. Ending support. So apparently Dragalia Lost Time in the Sun is over. So if you're a fan of that game, you might want to start preparing for something that had even less of a shelf life than, say, the Wii Shop Channel. So I don't know if it's, you know, revenues down or what. You know, it's always a weird thing, like for games on like mobile platforms, that like they come and go and like they just stop getting supported. Like it's always a very weird thing to me. Just coming from a generation where I still have most of my cartridges and discs for older consoles, and newer consoles. So, yeah. I myself never got to play it. From what I hear, it's actually very good. So there's a lot of hope that maybe they'll adapt something, or at least take the IP and make, you know, like a Switch game or something. You know, I would like to see that. I'd like to see, you know, Nintendo. If it was Nintendo, I think it might have been Intelligent Systems that made it. Or might be getting that confused with Fire Emblem Heroes. But yeah, just a new RPG IP would be nice on Nintendo systems. So, yeah, was there a date given for that? Final Chapter will launch in July. Once part 2 of Chapter 26 releases this summer, service for the game itself will close at an unspecified date. So there we go. Only launched in 2018, so it's only 4 years old. Oh, okay. So there aren't any plans to remove the ability to play the game at this time. So you will still be able to play it for some period of time. But that said, I mean, once it's no longer making any money and there's no longer any new content drops, you know, I think it might be time to start looking elsewhere for other games, unfortunately. Because they once you stop doing content releases for a game on mobile, especially for like a gacha games as a service type thing, days are numbered, pretty much. All right, So that is going to wrap up Quickfire News. As I said, a lot of Nintendo stuff. Nintendo's seeming to pick up some, not the spiciest news, unless you're a big Wii or DSi Shop Channel fan. But just a couple things here and there. So, all right. Now it's time for our deep dive. So we're going to talk about Journeys Through the Radiant Citadel. So for the live audience on Twitch, you are seeing the alternate book cover for this book. So Journeys Through the Radiant Citadel is an upcoming Dungeons and Dragons adventure book. Going to be sort of in the style of Candlekeep and Tales from the Yawning Portal, where it is 13 distinct adventures that are not connected, that are designed to be sort of like allow you to drop it into an existing campaign or to run them as one shots. And sort of the, tying factor to them is they are all sort of, have something related to this location known as the Radiant Citadel. So before we get into the book itself, this is a notable book in that it is the first ever Dungeons and Dragons book where the writing team is entirely comprised of black and brown writers. The writers are Justice Ramin Arman, Dominique Dickey, Bashir Gauss, Alistair Guzman, D. Fox Harrell, T.K. Johnson, Felice Jewi. I probably butchered that name. I'm so sorry. Serena Marie, Monadipa Mundal, Mario Ortegon, Miyuki Jane Pinkard, Pam Punzalan, Aaron Roberts, Terry Romero, Stephanie Yoon, and co-lead Ajit George. Huge thing for Dungeons and Dragons, which has had Wizards of the Coast some problems in past years working with creators from minority groups. Lot of pretty significant missteps there. Candlekeep being a notable example, where they like completely butchered one of the adventures from one of the creators, one of the designers, I should say. And then for the design team in total, more than 50 black and brown people in various departments worked on this book, whether it's the writing team, the art team, the marketing team, which is incredibly significant for a project like this. Typically in the past, these design teams have been very, very white and typically very male. So right off the bat, I wanted to get that out there because that's significant. And why it's significant is with this team, you know, we have folks from all over who have backgrounds from all over the globe, folks from Southeast Asia, folks from South America. We have folks, you know, from the US. I don't know if there are any creators from Africa. But I do believe there are adventures that are from people who at least have African descent and sort of the point being, we have writers who are creating adventures who are using sort of their history and their culture and their mythologies in a way that is representative as opposed to appropriative. Right. So it's not, a bunch of guys in Redmond is, I think, where the office is, thinking about, mythologies like across the globe and what can we learn from them, and doing it from like an outsider perspective. So being able to get a lot of fantastic adventures that are not pseudo medieval Europe, is going to be great. A lot of the art in the book looks fantastic and showcases a lot of different really cool places where characters can go, cultures they can experience. So I think that's going to be great. Now, so this ties into the Radiant Citadel, which is a new location. This is a city that was formed from this big giant crystal in the deep ethereal plane. So we don't get a whole lot of stuff in the ethereal plane in D&D because it's often considered like, oh, we'll use that to just get somewhere else. And even then, like, because it doesn't tie to the outer planes, it's you use it to get to like the other inner planes, which don't see a whole lot of use, outside of like the elemental planes. It's usually like, well, you would just go directly to the Feywild, or you go directly to the elemental plane of fire. And that's pretty much it. Like, there's not a whole lot of like elemental plane of air, earth stuff. Or you might go directly to the Shadowfell. So what this does is it kind of structures it as this new location in the deep ethereal that connects to other material planes. And it has a bunch of gems, like house-sized gems that orbit around it that occasionally come into contact and dock at the large, crystal city. And that allow people to like step onto it and then use that gem to go venture off into other worlds. So if this sounds familiar to longtime D&D fans and you're like, oh, well, that kind of sounds like Sigil or Sigil, however you want to pronounce it, the City of Doors, kind of similar, except instead of being off in the astral sea or astral plane somewhere and connecting to the outer planes, which in the cosmology of D&D are all based on, philosophy and alignment, and sort of afterlives, this is one that's connected to the inner planes and connects you to different material planes, which I think is cool. What's even cooler is it has something like 27 gems, but it only outlines, I think it only outlines 13 of them, one for each adventure. So it intentionally leaves a whole slew of them open-ended for you to connect your own worlds to, or if you want to say, well, this one's connected to Kryn. This one's connected to Eberron. for me, this one's connected to Jamora. This one's connected to Solas. For Dimension 20 fans, this one's connected to Exandria for Critical Role fans, and allows you to create sort of this nexus for material planes. So that right off the bat is cool. And you get this really blending of cultures in this city that is, again, built on this giant crystal just drifting in the ethereal plane, in the deep ethereal. And the architecture is done specifically in like a stone cut architecture that Ajit George talks about, where he wanted to incorporate that from, you know, his own culture. And so you have the bones of this creature that like wrapped up around the crystal that fossilized and then sort of became the foundation for a lot of the buildings and structures in the city. And they were very clear to point out they want the Radiant Citadel. You know, there are, although there are factions and they're like, there's guards and things like that. The Radiant Citadel isn't a place where you go to have adventures in the city. It's meant to be a place of respite and hope, and that you go out from the city to help people, you know, to go find adventure and to help people. And very much inspired by solar punk and hope punk as genres. And so for those who aren't aware of those terms, it's essentially like, if you're familiar with grimdark, they are intended to be just the opposite of that. So grimdark is often like aesthetically very dark, you know, just in terms of visual elements, but also in terms of themes. Like everything is awful, no hope whatsoever. Everyone's bad. Like there are no good, decent people. And it's often like anti-heroes looking to just survive. And most of the time, not. Whereas, with these, it's meant to, like, although there are, you know, with solar punk and hope punk, although there are challenges, the goal is for that genre is to prove that, you know, there's always hope for a better tomorrow, and to believe in a better tomorrow, and to do it by being the change in the world. And to do it through being good and light and, you know, that sort of stuff. So, I mean, we're looking at two very, you know, it's like if you took everything of Grimdark and you just flipped it on its head, and took the opposite of it, this is what you get. And I think that's reflected in the, alternate cover art. Which is, it has a very like, you know, almost a little bit of, it makes me think of like Steven Universe, just very uplifting and light and crystal oriented. There's going to be like 11 new creatures in the book, and they're all like made out of gems and crystals and everything that are like conglomerations of past heroes and ancestors, within the Radiant Citadel. And it's like they're the amalgamations of their memories and histories. And so as they, you know, converge, they form like the shape of these creatures, that then be sort of become mascots of like the various factions. So yeah, I'm super stoked. I love to see very hopeful stuff. It's far too often I see D&D ending up being used as like a way for people to just do like really punishing, awful settings. And just like very nihilistic, just dark type stuff. And I get like if people want to do that because that interests them for some, you know, because that's their thing, that's their jam, or maybe they want to do it to work through something. Sure, not my cup of tea. You know, it's I certainly you know, I played through, so like Witcher has often been described as like a grim dark type thing. You know, I played through Witcher 3. It definitely wore on me. A lot of the just like the really sort of dark storylines, and even just like the visuals. And you know, I thought for a moment, you know, when you do the Blood and Wine expansion, you get to Toussaint, it's like it's bright, it's colorful, there's life everywhere. It's like, this is great. This is such a breath of fresh air, quite literally. That it is so nice to just get to a place where it feels like there's actual sunshine and color. Which then, of course, you know, there's a whole storyline that kind of upends that, but still, for me, I like fantasy stories for the idea that like you can be change, you can be a change for good in the world. And so this book is going to be my jam. You know, I'm super stoked for this alt cover. I am so excited for it. But it's just sort of the pastel crystal shapes and colors is very pretty. And just the stylization too, it makes it look like stained glass, which I think sort of reinforces the sort of crystalline theme to it. As I said, this is an adventure book. So folks who have been listening to the podcast for a while recall when I did my my review of Strixhaven. Little disappointed in that they called it a campaign setting, and it was really like a big adventure book with like an extra couple of chapters about Strixhaven and some character options. This feels like a similar vein to Strixhaven, but is appropriately categorized. Now, from what I understand, there will be no character options, okay? But there will be like a gazetteer about the Radiant Citadel itself to explain like the setting, the themes, how to fit it into your own campaign, what you can do. You know, there may be like activities that you can do in the Citadel, the various factions. And then you get into the 13 separate adventures, which will take you from levels 1 through 13, I believe. You know, granted, we still don't get like a upper tier sort of module for D&D. There's been some discussion on that. You know, I personally don't think we'll ever see an upper tier module just because most groups never make it to that tier, and so it's just a bad business decision for Wizards. Like you would have to start your characters at a high level to play that module for most groups. And then just high level D&D just is not balanced at all. In like fifth edition. And that's kind of been the case for like most editions. Fourth edition being the prime example, but that's because honestly, like upper tier, like epic tier was pretty much the same thing as like the other tiers. It's just you kind of had a few more tools at your disposal for survivability. But otherwise, like, I mean, your damage numbers got higher, but so did monster HP. It had a very like Skyrim type feel where things scaled with you, and so it was hard to see progression. Like if you were just looking at percentages, like they wouldn't have been changing. But that's neither here nor there. The important thing is, I think, is it'll be really great to see different kinds of adventures in different kinds of settings. And just different points of view. And, you know, of course, when this book was announced, a certain cohort of the D&D community came out and if either expressing confusion as to why noting of who the writers were, or outright hostility for mentioning it. The important point being is by specifically opening it up and finding people that, you know, haven't really been featured before on these products is allowing the game to give a richer, more well-rounded experience because you're getting new points of view. Is we're not rehashing the same content over and over again, which coincidentally is kind of what that cohort wants, because they all want the same campaign settings over and over and over again. Yeah, I'm very excited to see what new stuff comes about with this. Because they used the Ravenloft book as a great example of getting different voices in and seeing what we can do. And I thought, like, the breadth of new ideas and new takes on places within Ravenloft was really nice in that book. And it was really interesting to see authentic takes on different locales and different cultures. Because this isn't really a hot take, because it's true. Historically, you know, it's gotten better with Wizards of the Coast, but they're still not quite there yet. And it's only, like, very recently gotten better. D&D has always had a problem with authenticity. Because even back when Gygax was working on it, they were using, like, Hollywood depictions as their basis for creating settings. And it was often just, like, him and, like, Dave Arneson and maybe, like, one or two other people coming up with campaign settings. Not really reaching out to people, like, even from the cultures being depicted to say, like, hey, is this accurate? You know, Al-Kadim being, you know, a big example of, like, from, you know, the inspiration from that was from, like, 1001 Nights and Lawrence of Arabia. And it's like, neither of those are actually authentic depictions of that region. So what are we doing? So I'm glad that there is some authenticity coming to the game. And my hope is that we can continue this trend. You know, I would love to see, like, if we're going to move in this direction, I think this is how you start getting those other cultures that have traditionally been problematic in the Forgotten Realms, from, like, your Al-Kadim and your quote-unquote Oriental Adventures books. Like, if you want to create that region, get a team of writers, either, you know, of East Asian descent or from that region. Or also, you know, opening it up to a whole bunch, like, make the region a bit richer and including all sorts of other people. So yeah, I think this is a great start. So unfortunately, you know, I know, like, Orion Black not going to be involved at all with anything from Wizards likely in the future, just because of how that whole situation ended up. For those that don't know, they were I forget what their actual title was, when they worked at Wizards. But as a black person working in the TTRPG industry, did not get very good treatment at Wizards of the Coast. And basically then, like, over the course of their tenure there, were increasingly sidelined more and more on projects. And then they finally left and said, if I'm out anyways, I might as well, you know, likely burn this bridge and just air out, like, what the what it was actually like to work there. And it was not great. That's putting it mildly. So, I mean, the cynical take is that, you know, Wizards is just now finally caving to public pressure and a lot of the backlash that keeps happening over things like that happening. And that's why we got this. That's why we're getting this book, which comes out in June. Forgot to mention that. So this is a book coming out in June. You know, a more hopeful take is that maybe the folks in charge are finally starting to come around, and maybe it's by kind of bringing in a more and more diverse group of people kind of in the lower ranks of the team. You know, maybe that's starting to filter its way up, and now we're getting to the point where we're seeing the effects of that. We're reaping the benefits of having a more diverse team. I think the reality is somewhere in between the two takes. But yeah, I'm super stoked for this book. Let's see if we have if it's just June or if we have a hard release date. Release date, June 21st. So yeah. Very excited about that. Also, as you know, as somebody that, like, you know, I played a Planescape game. I didn't play Planescape Torment or any of the PC games. So I don't have that history with the setting that a lot of older D&D players do. Particularly people in my age group. I'm more excited for this than I ever would be for Planescape. Planescape, like, it has a similar feel of, like, it's in the shape of a torus. So it's kind of got, like, a ring world vibe to it. City of Doors, so there's, like, portals everywhere to the various outer planes. It's unclear if it also has portals to, like, the inner planes and the material plane? I don't know. The setting seems to be very focused on doing, like, outer planes adventuring. And also, like, there's a whole bunch of factions in the city that, like, are all backstabbing each other. And so, like, there's a whole bunch of intrigue within the city itself that just feels exhausting. So if we're going to put out, like, essentially a version of that, that's, hey, you can now jump to other material planes from here. And also, like, it's cozy. It's filled with light and everybody's kind. I'm all for that. Like, I mean, it's a lot of the recent third party stuff that I've picked up for D&D has been in that genre, between, like, Humblewood and Dragon Stew and things like of, like, cozy, like, they're still adventuring and there's still combat and things like that, but, like, having it just be a little bit nicer than D&D typically is, I dig it. And so, this will kind of be, like, the first, anthology book that I think I pick up, because I don't have Yawning Portal. I don't have Candle Keep or anything like that. So, I'm excited for this one. So, and we'll see, maybe we'll see how it fits in with my own campaign setting. So yeah. All right. So that is going to wrap up on the deep dive for that. There are a bunch of videos up, interviews with Ajit George and God, I don't know who the other co-lead is. But like D&D Beyond and Todd Kenrick did a bunch of interviews with them. So those are all up. They're great. And just talking about sort of the design process and the team and everything. Highly recommend checking those out. So, while we have time, we are going to do a quick quest log before we wrap up. Right, so quest log is where I try and set some goals, some geeky, nerdy goals to do each week. Report back on how I did and set new goals for the upcoming week. So, I was away, didn't really get a chance to work on anything. You know, my goals were color another comic. I've got like four left. Didn't get anything done. Between God, it was the travel was like we had to drive an hour and a half to the airport. Then take a, you know, 2 to 2.5 hour flight to Atlanta, then stay overnight in Atlanta, then drive anywhere from 4 to 6 hours up to Gatlinburg or around Gatlin, you know, Gatlinburg Pigeon Forge in Tennessee. And then do the same thing on the way back. So it was just a lot of traveling. So like, you know, when we got back, it was like we arrived back Sunday morning, and the day was just like shot because we were exhausted already. And then getting sick. So hopefully I'll get better. So the goal will be get another one of those comics done, very close to finishing all 100 comics for the book, for the 8-Bit Adventures comic book. I did start Mad Monster Mansion and Banjo Kazooie. I'm still working on completing it. I got a couple of jiggies, but you know, it's a tricky level, that one. I have not turned into a pumpkin yet, because I know there are a bunch of jiggies associated with that. So looking forward to that. Pumpkin was my favorite one. Like, it's another one of those forms where you can't do anything, but it's just, you know, you're just a little pumpkin. So what's not to love? Okay. So I am going to keep those goals for next week. So unfortunately, didn't complete them at all, but I was away. Hard to do stuff on vacation. So, all right. So, as I said, quick quest log. And that is actually going to wrap up our episode for this week. Thank you all for joining me for this episode of the 8-Bit Adventures Podcast. If you would like to see more content from me, 8-Bit Adventures, you can check out my website at 8-bitadventures.com. Over there, you can find the comic that this all is named after. You know, I have my art portfolio there, VODs for the podcast, episodes of other podcasts are up there. If you'd like to help support all that stuff, excuse me, best way to do that is to become a patron over at patreon.com/8bitadventures. You can become a patron for as little as $1 a month. That helps support everything across the board. Patrons get early access to comics. They get access to patron-exclusive comics. And $2 and up patrons get some sort of behind-the-scenes custom D&D content that I'm working on. That I'm always tinkering with for my own games. And you know, that may show up eventually when our D&D show Tales of Jamora returns. So big shout out and thank you to all of my current patrons. Thank you for your support in hosting the 8-Bit Adventures podcast, Tales of Jamora and Berkshire Bites. The opening theme of this podcast is One Up by Professor Shy Guy. You can find his work over at professorshyguy.bandcamp.com. So with that, we are finished for this episode. So once again, thank you for joining me. I hope you all stay safe. I hope you all are doing okay. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. And as always, have fun, happy gaming, and enjoy your pie cake.